Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it's 5:04 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is March 20th. Thought we'd kick off with the Chinese 10-year yield because it's still around 2.85% and it's contracting. So that I think more than anything else helps to really highlight that China has not had the same kind of inflationary problem as many Western countries. And the easy answer is that they didn't print nearly as much money as everyone else did. And subsequently, they haven't flooded their market with liquidity either. So even though they have ended the COVID quarantine and the quarantine has been going on for 3 years, they resisted the temptation to give people free money. And that has helped to contain inflation. So I think that's really worth highlighting first, because when we think about bond yields, well, the 10-year yield in the USA is still quite a bit higher than that in China at 3.48%, and the yield was a bit steadier in here today. So as we look at an unfolding banking crisis and we think about what the potential outcomes are, well, then you have one solution, which would be to go in, rescue all the banks, make them whole, either by giving them money, cutting interest rates aggressively, and giving them a sharply positive yield curve and a big spread that would help to repair the balance sheets over time, and then artificially depress the 10-year yield as and other yields along the yield curve to ensure that all those losses that have been taken over the last 2 years are unwound. And of course, then that would necessitate a massive quantity of cash. So it would certainly help to solve one problem and probably then seed a really profound inflationary problem. And the interest rates that we have right now would pale into insignificance relative to where they would have to go to contain a wage price spiral similar to what we had in the 1970s. And of course, that would then also create a really significant geopolitical issue when the trust that is put into the dollar then becomes moot. Well, then the hunt would go on for a new reserve currency. Now, there are lots of factors that go into a reserve currency, but stability is certainly one of them. And the dollar is rolling over. It has encountered resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average, and it is starting to come back down. But it's not doing so in a really dynamic manner. It's just coming back down. And I think we are overdue a downtrend in the dollar. The thing that I've been really rather interested in is that we had a meaningful low in the dollar in 2014, and then this spike higher in the dollar was a little bit longer than the normal cycle. Because when the dollar goes down, well, generally it will go down for about 7 years. When it starts to go up, well, then it starts going up for about 7 years, and this time it's been 8 years. But usually when it rolls over, then it will fall for 7 years, and that would take us down to n potentially new lows, which would be around 70 or lower on the dollar index, and that might take between now and all the way out to about 2030 to occur. So, what happens next in terms of money printing is obviously important. So, the first is that they will simply wade in and rescue everyone. But the alternative is that they'll supply as much liquidity as is required, and they'll help banks to paper over their their mark-to-market losses. You have to just bear in mind that when one buys a negative yielding bond and it now has a positive yield, and there were about 18 trillion in nominal value of bonds that had negative yields and now have positive yields. Although I think it is worth highlighting that the volume of bonds that have negative yields has broken higher. So the compression in yields that started about 3 or 4 months ago, it is now starting to have a measurable effect. But and of course that will help to ease some of the pressure from negative yielding debt going positive. But as long as you're sitting on the it's sitting on the balance sheet, and you can still anticipate that it will mature and you'll get most of your money back. Well, it's a loss, but it's not a catastrophic loss because you're still going to get paid those coupons. Now, of course, those coupons are not going to be as attractive today as they were when they were bought, when the bond was bought in the first place because of inflation, but you're getting something. It's really more a liquidity issue. And that is basically that you have available liquidity so that you can hold on to the bond and still conduct your normal business. And I think that is primarily what central banks are doing. They're providing liquidity. Of course, then you had what happened with Credit Suisse and UBS over the weekend. And the Swiss regulator waded in and forced them to merge. And that's certainly interesting because shareholders were not consulted. And I think that's certainly a really important event. But then the contingent convertibles were marked to zero. Now, these were alternative to Tier 1 capital, but alternatives to Tier 1 are still Tier 1. So they were given a very high rating. Now, this is really significant because it's quite similar to how collateralized debt obligations. The senior tiers were given a AAA rating, whereas the junior tiers were not. Well, contingent convertibles were basically designed in the aftermath of the credit crisis that the owners of the bonds would be bailed in the event that the bank was to get into significant trouble. And then, of course, they were comforted with the fact that, well, we've just been through a banking crisis, so we're not going to have another banking crisis immediately. And in fact, that was true. It's taken 15 years. But now there are significant issues, and liquidity issues are popping up in banking sectors all over the world. And Deutsche Bank has had problems with their CoCos on several occasions in the past. So it's the go-to bank for thinking about, well, where is the next problem going to reside? Of course, considering what's happened with all the other German banks, if Deutsche were to get into significant problems, it will simply be nationalized. But the bigger point here is that if you have CoCos on your balance sheet, you're selling them today. And if you're not, well, then you're making a big bet that governments will continue to support banks and they will not allow further banks to get into trouble or to default. And I think that's a big determination. Then, of course, people will be reading prospectuses. Nobody reads prospectuses in the good times, but they certainly read them in the bad times. And there's a lot of arguments going on right now that it's really only the Swiss banks had this full bail-in and knockout before equity. And we'll see. I rather think that it's unlikely that it was only the Swiss banks had that kind of verbiage. But what we definitely have then is evidence of liquidity being provided where it is needed. And the swap lines are open, and that's an open call on the dollar. So that's why the dollar is going down. It's not necessarily that Europeans are suddenly borrowing a ton of dollars via the discount or via the swap line. But the swap line is open, and it's an open call. So they can basically borrow as much as is required. But That does not mean that interest rates aren't going to continue higher. Because when the Bank of England had an issue with the pension sector, and lots of pensions got margin calls, well, they basically supplied them with the cash they required and then kept on raising interest rates. And that is the second alternative. Instead of ceding what could potentially be a really significant wage price spiral, they may continue to raise rates and depress the economy. If we think about what are the reasons why the economy has not rolled over or why inflation has been so strong, well, it's because demand was artificially supported by massive money printing. And then a large swathe of the population retired and stopped working. And this is true in several countries. Now, I saw an article, for example, over the weekend. It was to the effect that about one-sixth of the UK working population is now on some form of sick leave or is taking some kind of sickness benefit. And it just reminds me that this is happening at exactly the same time that the tax burden on the economy is at the highest ever. So, how many people are really sick? Or how many people are sick because they're depressed, sick because they don't have ambition any longer, because they feel like there's no need to work, or they shouldn't have to work, or there's no point working because the government is going to take it all anyway. So there's certainly a reason why people are not working. And in order to get inflation under control, either you have to find more people to do the jobs that are available, or you need to shrink the economy down to where the number of jobs available equals the number of available workers. Well, that would be a really significant contraction. In order to get inflation under control, it would be a, I think, a very hard landing type of recession. But it would help to control inflation, and it would help to reset some of the debt ratios so that you can have a recovery later. So you have perhaps harsher medicine for a better outcome later, or you have a return to the status quo, which would be massive money printing, but then the potential for a much more significant problem in future. And I think that there is still hope that they will go for option two, which would be the which basically would be to have the tough medicine now. And the main reason for that is China. That China has not got an inflation problem. And Xi Jinping is in Russia right now playing statesman. And China's in a geopolitically strong position at present, and they have a military that they continue to invest in, which is fully laden with a full arsenal, and NATO is running down its arsenal in Ukraine. So it's not simply about rescuing banks or anything like that. I think that there are much bigger questions that are in play here, and they will have an impact on how decisions are made. So, I think it is exceptionally likely that interest rates will rise this week, and it might be the last interest rate hike, depending on how deflationary some of the upcoming data is, but it may not be the last interest rate hike. So, there is certainly risk in the market. What I thought was very interesting today is how the rebound in stocks was reported on. So, the S&P 500, I saw a news headlines today saying a big rebound in stocks. It basically unwound the decline put in on Friday, still hovering here in the region of the 200-day moving average. And stock market investors are betting that it is liquidity is going to be the answer, that we're going to have a flood of liquidity and risk an inflationary outcome in order to solve this problem, and that stocks would benefit from that in at least the short to medium term. And it is still steady here in the region of the 1,000-day moving average, and it did break the sequence of lower rally highs. But then, when we think about the advanced decline line, this is it's an index that takes all the ad advancing issues, takes away the declining issues, gets a total, and then adds it to whatever happened yesterday. So, in a benign market environment, you can anticipate that the advanced decline line will trend higher. Well, it has pulled back below the 200-day moving average. It's testing the sequence of higher reaction lows. So, now really is the do or die moment. It is either going to rebound now and push back above the trend mean, hold the sequence of higher reaction lows, or it's going to fail. And if it fails, well, then we're going to see another significant leg lower in the wider stock market. If it bounces from here, it will confirm a recovery hypothesis and potentially then a rebound for the larger cap companies back up to test their highs. The Russell 2000, however, is right in the region of the lower side of its range. Now, if we then look at what's going on in Asia, the Nikkei was in negative territory today and still pausing here and has been ranging for over a year. Let's just think about the fact that it has been going sideways for a couple of years, but it has been trending higher for a decade. And it has broken out of this base formation. So now the big question is going to be whether Japan has the wherewithal to go it alone and whether they're going to be able to sustain their quantitative easing program and yield curve control indefinitely. And I think that is going to come to a head eventually. But at least for them, all of their debt is held internally, whereas the USA is very much dependent on the kindness of strangers. The Hang Seng was in negative territory today as well, and pulling back from this really impressive rebound. The challenge, of course, here is that China might have a geopolitically strong position, but that does not mean that international investors have to leave their money in China. And obviously, here we're seeing some weakness coming through in the Hang Seng as well. The entire world is courting India and trying to figure out which way it's going to go. Will it be still reasonably neutral and buy oil from Russia, but while at the same time cooperating with NATO countries and Australia in trying to contain China? I think that there's a very clear potential that's exactly what India wants to do. And nonetheless, the Nifty index is pulling back below the 200-day moving average. It's coming down to, I suspect, the lower side of this range, having failed to sustain the upward break. Chances are it's going to come back down and test the 16,000 level, and then we'll see what happens. Will it? I think that would then provide an interesting entry opportunity as it comes into the region of the 1,000-day moving average. There's obviously a big question about geopolitics and which countries would benefit from friendshoring or reshoring. And Mexico's market has steadied here in the region of the 200-day moving average and the upper side of the base formation. But I think that we do need to see a weaker dollar, not just for a couple of days, but it needs to break its trend in order to really reignite interest in emerging markets, and not least because of the risk of a US recession. but where we definitely have evidence of demand is in gold. And gold got up to test the $2,000 level in here today and then closed a little bit shy of it. We have a short-term overbought condition, so we might easily get some pause and consolidation here, but it has been consolidating. So I think any pause here is likely to be quite shallow. And personally, I will use that as a buying opportunity. And I think that it is more likely than not that gold is going to follow the performance of the metal in other currencies. So gold has popped up to new all-time highs in the pound, in the euro, the Australian dollar, the Japanese yen. And like David used to say, gold does best when it is appreciating in all currencies. Then we're about a year out from the next halving, and the Bitcoin price has pushed up through the 25,000 level. So this is a meaningful breakout, and it suggests that 25,000 should now be an area of support, and at the very minimum, the region of the 200-day moving average should offer support now. But of course, both gold and Bitcoin going up together suggests that investors are looking for a hedge against the very real possibility that there's going to be a lot more fiat currency printed, and that investors will prize some form of hedge against the devaluation of fiat currencies. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.